Good morning, world. Welcome to another episode of the IP Breakfast with attorneys Albert Dicady and Emmanuel Coffey. Good morning, counsel.
Counsel, good morning. We welcome you wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon. How are you this morning, counsel?
Doing well. So let's remind our audience that the advice, opinions that we express in this program, in this episode, is ours and does not impart in our employers, and also we do not provide legal advice. So if you hear anything in these programs that you want to follow, you do want to check with your attorney. So, counsel, today we wanted to touch on two things. There is this new there was an unveiling of the National Council for Expanding American Innovation that happened on last Monday. We wanted to talk about that, and we also want to take some time to talk about Justice Ginsburg, who passed away on Friday. So before we go into the NCEAI, which is the acronym for the National Council for Expanding, we've started talking about some of these things, counsel. Can you introduce some of the ideas that we just started discussing?
Yes, In one of our episodes, we introduced the USPTO's 2018 Success Act study, which Congress had asked the USPTO to conduct a study and to report to Congress, which was done in 2019. And apparently, they're following up on this, counsel.
Yes, yeah, so several reports have been created already to look at the gap in women involvement in intellectual property, and they're also going to continue to look at the gap that exists in different minority groups. We talk about this in the context as well that how important intellectual property is for the GDP. We mentioned that it was about 36% of the U.S. GDP is attributed to intellectual property, and I think you also mentioned, counsel, over 86% of the population really works in IP, whether they know it or not.
Right, and you started saying about McDonald's, the example of McDonald's, which I think was a good way of imparting that info to our listeners.
Yeah, so I mean, people who may not know that they work in IP, for example, would be somebody who works at McDonald's. And if you ask these workers what industry they work in, they might say the food industry. However, that if you look at McDonald, the name is a very strong mark, protected by trademark. Everything on the menu is a trademark. Big Mac, any of these, any of their food is trademark, and they're protected. And because of their protection, and other trade secrets that they also have, the way they, they fried their fries, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So all of that gives them, creates a business and protect the business asset and the business has flourished and is now employing a lot of people. So these people indirectly work in intellectual property, though they may not know it.
So your point is that in whatever industry you may be, as remote as it may seem, you are working in intellectual property somehow.
Yeah, and any of these areas can innovate, and they can continue to get new trademarks. They can continue to create new trade secrets. They can create copyrights, they can create patents as well. So all facets of intellectual property can be included in their business. And sometimes the reason the business has not failed is because of the IP protection that it has.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big thing. And we've also been talking about in many episodes, we talk about in order for us meaning the United States, to stay competitive, that it needs to find a way to fire with all cylinders, and which we alluded to that currently with the gaps in different pockets of the population not being able to participate fully in intellectual property, that means that we are not firing in all cylinders, and this is what I think this council will be looking at and come up with strategies to bridge the gap and making us more closer to actually be able to fire in all cylinders.
Yes sir, it's the next frontier, and they're talking about Industry 4.0, and all this involves IP. So, but I guess we want to stay on that council.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the USPTO website, obviously. www.uspto.gov is where people would go to find that information. And if they navigate to the bottom of the link, they'll see a logo that looks like a tree. And that's the logo for that council, and for that program. And they can actually look into it and learn more, and also see how they can contribute to make this endeavor happen. So I'll just quickly read the mission of the NCEAI. Which is the National Council for Expanding American Innovation. The mission is to help the United States and patent trademark develop a comprehensive national strategy to increase participation in our innovation ecosystem by encouraging, empowering, and supporting all future innovators. That includes increasing the involvement of women and other underrepresented groups. There are other parts of the mission that I will not read, but generally that's what this organization will be working. But we talk about a council, but who are the members of the council?
Yeah, that, I guess that's important that we touch it. It seems that the members touch on every aspect of society. You have the federal government, you have academia, you have industry, you have venture capitalists, you have all sorts. It seems like it's a very comprehensive across the board type of membership.
Yeah, nonprofits, and also the intellectual property associations are involved, and I'm pretty sure some of there'll be more, but I wanted to get a little bit more detail on who these individuals are and their position that will actually be sitting there. It seems like on the government side, we're going to have the Secretary of Commerce, currently Wilbur Ross, and the Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property, and who's the Director of the United Patent and Trademark Office, Andrea Yanku. They will be the co-chairs of this council, and among other government entities that will be also a part of this council is the Small Business Administration and also the National Science Foundation. So perhaps you can introduce the academia people.
Yeah, in academia we have Dr. Wayne Frederick, MD, MBA, President of Harvard University, Dr. Timothy Sands, President of Virginia Polytech Institute and State University, Dr. Wendy Winterstein, president of Iowa State University, Michael K. Young, president of Texas A&M University.
Yeah, I mean, so those are some heavy hitters. In industry, you have like Mary T. Barra, chairman and CEO of GM. You have Dr. Giovanni Coforo, MD, from who's the CEO of Bristol Myers Squibb. Sephra Arkatz, CEO of Oracle Corporation. Kathleen Fish, Chief Research Development Innovation of Procter Gamble. Scott Frank, President and CEO of AT&T Intellectual Property LLC. Alex Gorsky, Chairman and CEO of Johnson & Johnson. You have Dr. Catherine Guriani, Chief Operating Officer and Vice President of IBM Research. Help me there, counsel.
Yeah, it's a long list. Yeah. You have Stephen Molenkov, CEO of Qualcomm Incorporated. We all know about Qualcomm. Dave Ricks, Chairman and CEO of Eli Lilly and Company. Michael Roman, Chairman and CEO of 3M Company. And then it goes into the intellectual property associations with Barbara Fiacco as president of American AIPLA, American Intellectual Property Law Association, and Warren Tudor, president of the board of directors of United Inventors Association.
Yeah, you have also some nonprofit organizations, the National GEM Consortium. You have the American Association for Advancement of Science. You also have NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers. You have, I think it's Autumn. And then you have some...
Yeah, it's Stephen. Yeah. It's the Association of Universities. They have a consortium, all the universities. They do have this Association of Universities.
Yeah. Among the independent inventors that are sitting there is Dr. Lonnie Johnson. We've mentioned Dr. Lonnie Johnson in our program before. Dr. Johnson worked on a lot of stuff, but the stuff that he's probably most famous for is this Super Soaker, which is a water gun that kids play with, which became pretty popular in about 10 years ago. Din Kamen. Din Kamen, for people who do not know, if you've seen things like the Segway, he's the inventor of the Segway and a lot of other invention. He's done, chairs that can go up stairs. You know, he's a prolific inventor, not just in mechanical stuff, but also in the biotech area as well. So, and we have some venture capitalists, like you have the Dr. Deepa Pakanathan, he's a Delphi Venture, and Mullen Yang, who's the operator Collective VCs, VC Fund. And you have small business, you have Dr. Genevieve Diaz, inventor, CEO, and of Sub UAS LLC, and co-founder of CTO at XTT. So, and people can actually go there, but we wanted to introduce that council because it is heavy hitters that are participating there to get this program going. And as something that we talk about a lot in our podcast is equity and allowing everybody in society to be able to participate in intellectual property. And that's why we do this program, so we can inform the audience about intellectual property. We are happy to see the such development.
Yes, most definitely. We welcome such development, and we will be tracking it and watching its progress as time goes on. So
Yeah,
I'm sure you'll hear from us. We will report to you on where they are and how they are making in terms of getting to their mission.
Yeah, and you know, in that website again, if you go to the www.uspto.gov and navigate through by scrolling down and see the tree and click on the tree, that would lend you to that right site. You, as the audience, can actually get involved as well. You can get involved in this program. There are, you know, there's an entry form where you can kind of give your suggestion how you think it can. So you can contribute as well. You don't have to be just a consumer of the of what's going on. You can also be a contributor to be helping the gap.
Yes, great. Council, as you know, time is the great dictator, right?
Yes. So currently, we wanted to switch to the next topic and reserve the next 14 or 15 minutes that's left on the program. We dedicated to Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away recently, who was a Supreme Court judge and a rock star, the only Supreme Court justice who actually have a hashtag, and who probably are known by the millennia. Because of her, she became very notorious. There's a book written about her called Notorious RBG. There's a film about her. She was one of nine women in 1953 who was accepted at Harvard. And she became first of her class. When at the time, many in the profession, women was not supposed to be lawyers. And when she was accepted at Harvard, from what I hear, that, you know, the professors barely questioned them. little did they know that she was going to be the first in her class. She was nominated. She started practicing and started taking a lot of cases on fighting women causes, and had very good success at the Supreme, arguing different cases at the Supreme Court very early in her career, and she continues. And in 1993, she was nominated by Clinton to be a justice. She was confirmed by 93 votes. She was confirmed by both parties, although she was very adamant and very clear about her agenda and very clear on the issues of how she was going to vote for her position on women issues and equality. We do send our condolences to her her family and to the law community in general. It's a loss for all.
Right. Hey, she was an icon, born on March 15, 1933 in Brooklyn, New York, by the way.
Yes. And funny that they started calling her Notorious RBG. And, you know, that name came from Notorious B.I.G., who was a rapper. So they asked her about that question, you know, is she bothered by this Notorious when she's kind of compared with an icon himself in the rap industry? And she says, no, not at all. In fact, we have a lot in common. We're both from Brooklyn.
She has two children, Jane C. Ginsburg and James Stephen Ginsburg. Her husband, Martin D. Ginsburg. Apparently, they were married, in 1954?
Yeah, they were married for a long time.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tidbit that Jane is a professor of law school teaching intellectual property. So we're not far from what we are talking about here. So she inspired, I'm sure she was inspired by her mom to become an attorney, and now she's teaching intellectual property at a university. So you know, there are many cases that signified you know, the legacy of RBG. We could mention some of them very early when she did a decision on she would have did majority decision on United States versus Virginia. That's the case that opens up that women can actually attend VMI, which is the Virginia Military Institute, which was a men only institution. She broke that barrier, and since women have excelled in that school as well.
Very good. One of her quotes: "My mother told me to be a lady, and for her that meant be your own person, be independent." That's interesting.
So she grew up with these values that women are equal with men, and wherever there was discrepancies, that she would fight for that, and she did as an attorney. She held her position as a in the court, and I think when she also interviewed for the job with President Clinton, one of the reasons President Clinton says he took her is because within 5 minutes in the conversation, she realized that she was very leveled on how she was gonna handle the court, and the interview came into a discussion of two people talking about the law rather than an interview. Granted that she was already past 60 years old, judges over 60 are not looked at to be in the to be put in the court, just because they usually tend to select younger people. So she was selected even though she was older, but that was one of the things. So some of the other cases, I'll cite them very quickly, because she also put her marks on not only these social issues like Homestead, where this was a victory for people with disabilities. That's Homestead VLC 1999. You had Ledbetter v. Goodyear Tire. This decision was against women looking for, made it a little bit difficult for women to fight for equality of pay in the job. She wrote a very tough dissent. Of course, she's also known for dissent, right? So she'll dissent when she doesn't have a decision that goes in her favor. She'll write very, very strong dissents. And she says in this case, Ledbetter case, she says, "In my view, the court does not comprehend or is indifferent to the insidious ways in which women can be victim of pay discrimination." So she was so forceful in this dissent that Congress actually did act on new laws to actually protect women. Other case that she worked on, not just worked on, but I mean, decision that she were part of the majority, or even wrote the decision, Obergefell type v. Hodges, and this dealt with LGBT Americans. The other one was Whole Women Health versus Helliston, 2016, and that dealt with Texas imposed very number of regulation on abortion clinics, and that she struck that down. But those are not the only cases those are cases that really made her, that's going to be her legacy. But we also want to highlight some cases that she worked on and also one of the very recent cases in intellectual property. But some of the intellectual property cases that she worked on are, for example, counsel Microsoft v. AT&T. She also worked in copyright cases in Eldred versus Ashcroft. She wrote a very strong dissent. Like I said, she tends to write big, strong dissents when she feels that that's necessary to at least counter the position of the majority in Georgia v. Public Resource. And her last case in intellectual property that she wrote was the United States. United States Patent and Trademark Office v. Booking.com, right? So you mentioned that case before, counsel. Perhaps you can say a little bit more about it. Counsel Coffee. All right, having not heard Counsel Coffee, so let me go into a little bit of what this case was. So we have in this Booking case, Justice Ginsburg announced a test for generic, for what is generic in the system, and she says the opinion began with three premises, right? So recognizing that generic term designated class of goods or services rather than an element of such a class. Compound marks are to be judged for distinctness as a whole rather than the collection of elements, and the relevant meaning of the term of its meaning to consumers. So she considered these principles, and the term generic, when taken as a whole, it signifies to customers the class of goods or services offered under the mark. When booking.com, generic consumers may refer to competing online travel reservation service as booking.com, e.g. Travelocity, because consumers do not perceive booking.com as a class of online travel reservation. Generically, the court ruled that booking.com is not a generic mark. So this is one of the latest cases that RBG did in intellectual property. So overall, this is a judge who had made a mark, not only raising barriers in school, in going to Cornell, going to be 9 out of 500 students at Harvard Law School. When she was hired, she could not find a job. After she graduated from Columbia, she couldn't find a job in any law firm in New York City. Fought her way, fought for women, fought for equal rights, fought for a lot of stuff, and the only person known as Notorious BRG. And so we wanted to do this as a tribute to her, that we took notice, that we saw her actions, we saw her decisions, wherein her decisions are differ from the conservative as somebody who reads the law today as what you think the intended drafters meant, and put it in the context of today, which I agree with her. I'm in that camp, because if I'm not in that camp, if I look at the conservative way of looking at the Constitution, which would say to look at the letter of the law and the intent of the drafters at the time of drafting this element, then I would be one-fifth of a person, and therefore I would never agree with that. So I think it's the correct ways to look at what is the intent of the Constitution itself, which was to create a better union, and that it is a living document, and that we should interpret it as what the drafters meant at the time, and also look into a context of what how it should be applied today. So I think that RBG had it right. Her legacy is here to stay. It's here for people to study and debate about. And she also, I should mention that she was good friend with one of the most conservative judges in the court. So she also showed us the example of being able to not agree, but could be agree to disagree, and we can find common grounds anyway. In her case, she did find common grounds in music and in other ways I'm forgetting the name of the judge right now. Council Coffey, I think you were disconnected, and we've been getting a little bit of problem with our connections. I do wish that you've enjoyed this episode, and that we little tribute that we did not take us too far apart from our discussion of intellectual property, and that we wish that Justice Notorious RBG rests in peace. Thank you for listening to this program. As the council would always say, until then, be well. Bye-bye now.